program in color.
Hello and welcome to the Radio Dan Show, starring your host, Radio Dan.
Enough of the fucking music. I kind of feel like we should use the Black Rock Cigarettes opening tonight. Remember that?
Yeah.
Might have been a little bit more fitting for tonight. Hello, everybody. It is the Radio Dan Show, and I am your host, Radio Dan. Welcome.
And I'm barely your intern, Jessica.
And Jessica is barely here, but the important thing is that she is here. How are you doing this evening?
I'm horrible. I'm so tired.
Why are you so tired tonight?
Because I fell asleep. I didn't go to sleep until 5:30 this morning.
Why would you stay up so late? You had to go to work today.
I just wasn't tired.
You're not okay. Now we're not going to blame this on the Law and Order marathon that you watched.
Well, I wasn't tired, I watched it.
Oh, I see. So you were up, and it was there.
Exactly.
It helped you get through your insomniac night.
Yeah, but didn't help me throughout the today.
I'm sure it didn't. Anyway, this is the radio program where we sit and discuss the wonderment of pop culture, talk about movies and television and radio things, and tonight we have a special guest coming on in a few minutes. Who might that be, Jessica?
That would be Eddie Carroll.
Mr. Eddie Carroll, that's right. And who is Eddie Carroll, Jessica?
Well, right now I guess his most... something we would know him from the most would be... He has been Jiminy Cricket since the 70s, no?
Yes, since 1973, he has been the voice of Jiminy Cricket. But
let your conscience be your guide.
I'm no fool, no siree. I'm going to live to be 103. You know that song?
Mm-mm.
You know, well, they always have Jiminy Cricket like doing the instructional things. All the instructional videos, things like that. You know what I'm talking about?
Uh-huh.
And that was one of the ones. It was like a self-esteem thing, and Jiminy Cricket was telling you about being smart and, you know, how to get through life, that kind of thing.
Oh. And, like little clips during on the Disney Channel?
Yes.
Like back in the day?
No, these were like videos that they would play, like, during school.
Oh, because I remember, like for instance, they would have the park guy.
Park guy?
Yeah, the park ranger. And he would have the bears cleaning, but he would separate it. So that they all had just, like, a little space to clean?
Oh, see, I don't remember that. Was it just a generic park ranger, or was it someone in particular? Was it that park ranger from Yogi Bear? The one who was always giving hassle on Yogi Bear?
No, did that's he wander on?
I know, I'm kidding. It's a joke. I know.
He foiled picnic basket taken.
Picnic basket. Thank you very much.
Picnic.
Yeah. So, anyway, what else is Eddie Carroll known for? Something that I find far more exciting.
Well, you
can spit it out.
Oh, goodness, I'm running on empty.
You are running on empty. That's Jessica.
He also does a one-man show, no?
Yes.
Where he impersonates...
Who?
Jack Benny. Mary!
Yay for Jack Benny. All right, can you do a Jack Benny impression real quick?
I did. I said, Mary!
That's your Jack Benny?
Yeah.
How about... Now cut that out! How about
that was good.
Well. How about that?
Oh, my heaven. Doesn't he say that?
I don't know. All right, how about... Yes!
Oh, the poor guy.
That guy. I don't know what his name is.
Yes!
But his existence is just funny.
Yeah.
Like, the creation of his character and how he's always... He pops up everywhere.
And
it's
also
just
he pops up
funny.
On The Simpsons all the time.
Yeah, I know. And now he pops up on The Simpsons in the same capacity, and I love that as well. But that's partly why The Simpsons is so brilliant. And I wonder how many people just look at that character on The Simpsons and just think, oh, that's just a funny, weird character that pops up here and there.
Oh, well, he used to be on... they used to do him in, like, Bugs Bunny things.
Yes, they did as well.
So that's where they probably think they got it. And maybe that's where Matt Groening did get it. You don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, they did a Jack Benny cartoon once where he was a mouse.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
You've seen that one?
Yeah.
The mouse, the...
Where they gotta
the
go
mouse
dancing?
The Jack belt. Yes, where they gotta go dancing, yes.
And they go into the cat's...
The cat's mouth.
Yeah.
That's what... You're good!
I remember that.
I did not know that you would remember that. That's brilliant. Way to go, Jess. Mad props to you.
Thanks.
All right, but before we get to Mr. Carroll and bring him on, there is something that I want to know. And that is, Ms. Jessica, what happens to be on your mind this evening?
Oh, we're going to do my segment before we...
Oh, yeah. Your segment is just... It's of paramount importance.
Well, today, remember how I told you how last weekend, or I should say the past weekend, a coworker of mine, and I was just... Actually, I was just playing around with being funny about it. But he had gone to the library. I guess he gets his movies from the library, and what they do is they hold it for you. When it comes in, it's yours, and it's free, so hey, you know, just borrow it. And he got, I think, 5 or 4 movies this weekend. So he saw them, and he came back and was telling me about them. Now, he saw Last Kiss.
Okay.
Which, if you would please play the barfing drop for me.
I don't have the barf drop, sorry. We're not fully dropped yet. But here,
why is it so difficult to get fully dropped? Are you busy doing nothing for the whole night? Nothing keeps you very occupied, doesn't it?
I sit and I think very hard, and if you were to listen inside my head, it would sound something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, I promise I will go and get all of the missing drops, and I know we're missing a bunch of good ones, like the Gene Rayburn one that we worked
funny.
On so hard to get.
Doesn't she have pretty nipples?
But instead, look at it this way. We have Nightmare.
No, it's not.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
It's hurting my ears.
Sorry about that.
Okay. So he got Last Kiss, which he said was pretty good. He said he didn't like the sappy love story, but everything in it, you know, the acting and, you know, the characters were pretty funny, so.
Okay.
So that's good to know that a movie I won't see is, you know.
Okay.
Sounds forgettable. He saw Sherry Baby, which, he's so funny. He was explaining to me, you know, people have bad lives out there, and then they make movies about it, and you just watch them, and they dig these deep holes for themselves, and it's just hard to watch. He said, not a very feel-good movie today.
No. Well, it didn't seem like it was a feel-good movie. Was he expecting it to be, like, the feel-good movie of the day?
No.
All right, then.
Also, he saw... Let me see if I can remember what he said, because I can't really remember a lot of things. Darn.
Boy, this is rough for you.
I know.
I'm sorry about that.
He also saw...
Sorry that I'm making you actually...
Oh, he saw Saw. He saw Saw 3. And he was telling me about... And I said, don't tell me about it, because I don't want to know, because I don't like those movies.
Oh, but not because it would ruin it for you.
No! Yeah, oh yeah, don't tell me because it'll ruin it for me.
Well, you know, I figured that you probably would have read it on Wikipedia by now. Isn't that one of your favorite things to do? You find out about movies that you don't want to see, and then you just read about it on Wikipedia.
That's true.
Right.
Although, I was only interested in doing it with the first Saw to get, like, the story of what everybody was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to do it with the rest of them. You kind of figure it's the same, only, like, more graphic or whatever. So he's telling me, because do you remember one time we were watching a movie, and it just so happened that we stopped the movie, and when we stopped the movie and went back to the cable, it was on that Spike horror movie awards thing.
Yes.
And it was a scene from Saw 2, and it was a girl who had to go into a vat of syringes.
No, doesn't she fall into the vat of syringes?
No, the guy pushes her. Like, all right, so it's 3 people, right? And this is the reason. I didn't know until he explained to me.
Massively disturbing.
It is so disturbing. They all have this disease, and the cure is only in one of the syringes in this pit.
This is ridiculous. What a concept. So the pit of syringes, there's one. So you got to stick yourself with all of them in order to find it?
No. You have to look through them because all the rest of the syringes are empty. You'll see the actual syringe.
Okay, so then you're just being poked.
Yeah, you're just being poked.
It's completely asinine.
It's retarded. It was one of the worst things to watch.
I saw it with you, I remember.
Wasn't that hard to watch?
Oh, yeah, it was not pleasant to watch. All right, yeah, but they showed so many unpleasant things in that little
montage?
Horror movie awards. Yeah, they showed that blowtorch eye thing from Hostel. I wasn't particularly interested in that,
well,
but I ended up seeing it anyway.
You know, what's funny is Hostel was one of those movies that I had Wikipedia, so when I saw it, when I saw it going on,
right,
I just kind of knew. You know, it wasn't such a shock as that syringe thing. Well, anyway, I was talking to Lee about the Saw 3, and he said, do you remember when you told me that that was so disturbing to you? He's like, Saw 3 is just worse. Just worse. He was explaining a scene to me. I told him, don't explain it to me. Do not explain it to me. And he just did anyway. I wanted to kill him.
Yeah, those, I don't know. It's torture porn. We all know that Radio Dan is not down.
Torture porn?
That's what I call it. I've been calling it that forever. You haven't been here?
Wow, no, I have been here. I just hadn't realized it. Or maybe I did realize it.
Yes.
And it's just new again to me.
Oh, okay. But you like that phrase.
Uh-huh.
That's
what
it is.
Well, I don't like it, but it's what it is.
That's what it is, yes. It's, whatever. It's plotless and no
evil.
Fun. And yes, Jessica, for once your overusage of the word evil is done properly, because that is absolutely evil. All right, so your friend at work got movies from the library, and then he watched them.
Yeah.
That was your segment. I'm starting to think about what your segment's been about. It's been about random dude renting things from the library. Or I should say, checking out DVDs from the library. Very good.
Shut up. What do you got?
You know what I have? I have Eddie Carroll. I have to interview him. I'm sorry. That's my segment for the night. What's your segment?
Yeah, so, where's your drops?
Do you want to see some drops? Is that what you want? I got your drops. You want to see drops?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Is that enough for you?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. You mean...
Yeah.
And you know, one of the things that Eddie Carroll worked for, one of the companies... That's Ray Jensen. That's right. You want to bring the guy on? Talk a little Jack Benny with him?
Sounds good.
Find out what it's like to tour the country as Jack Benny. Let's see.
What are you doing?
Just getting ready to bring my good pal Eddie Carroll on the air. That's all. Calling. We should have dialing music one day. I've said that for like 6 months now.
Hello.
Hello.
Is that you?
Yes, sir. It is.
Great.
Hello, Eddie, how are you? Welcome to the program.
Well, thanks, Dan.
I'm sitting here with my co-host, Jessica. Jessica, say hi to Eddie.
Hello, Mr. Carroll.
Hi, Jessica. I'm getting an echo.
Oh, no. Oh. Are you really?
You know what?
I'm hearing myself back like a second later.
We might want to use the other...
Okay, well, you know what, Eddie? I'm going to call you right back because I've got a way to get rid of that. Hang on. I'll call you right
Great,
back
I appreciate
in 30 seconds.
It.
Sure.
Okay.
Well, normally I would do something like this. But, fortunately, we here at the Radio Dan program always have a backup for situations like this. And,
That's awesome.
I think you can figure out what it is. That's too bad, because now he'll miss out on all my wonderful drops. And also, taking calls would be pretty much non-existent. But that might be anyway, right? Okay, here we go. Eddie Carroll, take two.
Hello.
Eddie, welcome back.
Gee, it's so good to be back again. I don't believe it.
That is insane.
Tell me how good it is. I'm telling you. Now, when he called me the other day, I was sitting in my car having lunch. And I answered the phone, and he says, "Hi, this is Jack Benny." I'm telling you, I dropped the phone. it was just so good and so out of left field. So how are you doing tonight?
So are you guys having fun in show business?
If you could call what I do show business.
Micro show business.
Yes, but I'm having the time of my life, I got to tell you.
Well, listen, when you're in love, everybody's in show business, I say.
Isn't that
well, listen, what's going on, guys?
Well, what I've been wanting to ask you is, how did you get started in this Jack Benny business?
Well, first of all, I'm a theater. I'm not a comedian or a stand-up comic, and there's a tendency for people to think that, and it's not their fault. We're so conditioned over the years to seeing Elvis impersonators and people like Rich Little who are wonderful at what they do. But the minute you begin to emulate somebody, immediately somebody pegs you as an impressionist, and they want to know how big your, how long your act is. Well, I don't do an act. It's not a comedy stand-up or an act or anything else, and it's not an impression. Did you guys ever see Hal Holbrook's presentation of Mark Twain?
I've seen it on television.
Right. Well, as you know, that's it's an acting piece, is
yes.
what it is. It's the way James Whitmore did Will Rogers and Truman, and the way Barbara Morris did True. It's what I've tried to do as a theater-trained actor and as a professional actor is to try to bring Jack Benny's humanity and his real reality to the stage, because by its very nature, guys, an impression is an exaggeration. What somebody will do is they'll, a comedian or somebody will take something that someone does and overdo it to get across the impression, plus try to hopefully get a laugh out of it.
Yes.
But you can't do that for 2 hours on stage because your audience will just get bored to tears with that. It's the difference between somebody doing an oil painting of you or someone at a state fair or a park will do a caricature of you. You know what I'm saying?
Perfect.
And that's basically what an impression is. But with me, as I said, not being a comedian or stand-up comic, my background has been as a professional actor. In 1983, I was working on a film, mm-hmm. and somebody dropped something backstage, and just out of sheer impulse, as people do when they kid around, I for some reason in my mind, I heard something drop and go boing, 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 and I don't know why, but in my head, I saw Jack Benny's violin or something bouncing. And so just on impulse, I said, oh, for heaven's sake, Rochester, that's my Stradivarius you dropped. You better find another job, or something silly like that. Anyway, it got a laugh. So after we finished shooting, the director came up to me. He said, you know, when you were doing Jack Benny the other day, he said, you not only sounded like him, you started to look like him. And I said, well, that's what we do as actors. It becomes an impulsive thing. You know, whenever you try to emulate somebody, you take on their physical characteristics or whatever. So he said, no, the reason I brought it up is he said, before we started shooting the movie, I was in New York. A friend of mine is a theater producer, and he's got a script already finished about Jack Benny's life story. But he can't find anybody to do the part. Because he said part of doing recreating a famous person is not only to sound like them, but hopefully to kind of look like him. And he can't really find an actor who fits all of that.
Wow, talk about right place at
I
the right time.
I was just about to use that exact expression.
It literally was deigned for me to have this. It fell into my lap, but it gets even spookier because at that time I was so busy with so many projects. I mean, I was doing films, I was doing television. My dearest friend in the world is Jamie Farr, the actor that played Klinger on MASH.
Oh, yeah.
And he and I at that time, as actors, also had a production company. And we were writing scripts and developing shows for ABC and CBS and did pilots for them and sold a show to MGM syndication and so forth. So we had like a dual career going on. And plus I was doing a lot of voiceover work and commercials. I had been doing the voice of Jiminy Cricket for about 12 years. And now I've been doing it for about 33 years.
Wow.
So anyway, so I was very fortunate to have all of this going on in my life. And so he said, you know, the director said, you should go to New York and meet this guy. And I said, I am so busy right now with everything. My family's here. I don't have time. But I'm just thrilled that somebody cares enough to want to keep Jack Benny's image alive because he was probably one of the maybe half dozen greatest entertainers of all time. So I forgot about it. Well, a few weeks later, I got a call from a guy who said, you don't know me, but I'm a friend of a director that you worked with on film. He said, I'm going to be producing a Jack Benny one-man show, and I can't find anyone. I said, yeah, he told me about you. And he said, well, I'm coming to L.A., and I'd like to meet you and see if you're still interested or maybe, you know, this could work out for us. So I thought, well, since he's coming all the way to L.A., I certainly owe him at least to go and meet him. Well, it was about 2 weeks before he got here, so I thought I'd kind of prepare, but I couldn't. In those days, there was no Blockbuster. I couldn't go somewhere and rent or get a copy of the Jack Benny TV show because I wanted to watch his walk, his attitude, and mannerism.
Right.
Not just try to remember him from my memory bank. And there was no, and so I thought, where the heck am I? I called friends of mine, anybody that has a print of a Jack Benny TV show. Well, a day later, a friend of mine that I had asked about called me. He said, you're not going to believe this. He said, starting tomorrow on a cable station, they're going to be showing the Jack Benny show every night.
Wow.
So suddenly I had my source material that I could download and watch every night to really work on his behavior.
Right place, right.
And I also started complaining around that period of time that my hairline was starting to recede. Well, when I combed my hair straight back, it was Jack Benny's hairline. I didn't have to buy a hairpiece. I didn't have to shave my hair. I didn't have to do anything. And that was just a matter of listening to his radio shows and getting his speech pattern and his delivery and timing. So anyway, when I met the 2 weeks later, when I went to meet the producer from New York, he had rented an office in Hollywood, and he had about six or seven other actors come in to audition because he figured he might as well see as many people as possible while I was here. And his attitude was, either I'll find somebody to do it, or if it's not right, I'll just forget it. So when I got there, the other actors were waiting, sitting down, waiting in chairs outside the hallway of his office. So I signed in last and went to the end of the hallway and waited around the corner. By the time the last actor was through, by now it was very dark in the hallway. The producer had opened the door from his office. The light from behind him was streaming into this kind of darkened hallway, and he was peering up and down to see where this last guy, Eddie Carroll, was. And at the end of the hallway, in the dark, in my best Jack Benny voice, I said, "Oh, Ted, listen, I heard that somebody was going to be doing a show about my life, so I got permission to come back down here again because nobody is going to do me but me." And I walked into his light and he went, "Oh, my God!" Anyway, I walked past him into the office. His partner and associate was sitting there, and they had a copy of the script on the table. So I picked it up, assuming he was going to ask me to read a few pages of dialogue. And he had the strangest look on his face, and he walked over to me, took the script out of my hand, and he said, "You don't have to do anything else. You already did it. When can you start rehearsal?"
Oh. Wow.
So that was the beginning. So I spent months in rehearsal. I spent hours every day. One day I'd work on his body language, his attitude, his behavior, his hand movements, his all of that. The next day I would spend hours just working on his vocal quality and his timing and his delivery and that Midwest Chicago twang and all of that. And I just wanted it to be so perfect because my ultimate goal, guys, was that once I came on stage, within a few minutes, I wanted the audience to buy the illusion that it really was Jack Benny, not just somebody doing him. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
I didn't want them saying, "Gee, he's doing a good impression of Jack Benny." I wanted them to accept the illusion and fall into that thing of believability, theatrical believability. It really was Jack Benny, so they could sit back and between them and me make this sort of unspoken bond where we now went on this wonderful journey of Jack Benny's marvelous life. And that's what the show is about, is Jack Benny sharing his entire life story with the audience, with his ups and his downs and the challenges he had in his life and the obstacles he overcame, all wrapped around this wonderful, marvelous humor of his.
That's really cool. You know, if someone were to do a movie about Jack Benny, there'd be tons of makeup, and there'd be cuts, and there'd be redos, and there'd be this, and there'd be that. And from what you're explaining, it sounds so much more, not just difficult, but complete when you're doing it with a live audience.
Well, what happens is, and as soon as I, no matter where I am around the country, whatever theater I'm in, as soon as I finish the show and take my bows, I come off the stage and go right out to the lobby, and I stand there and I chat with people as they leave. And people will stand in line for half an hour just to come up and tell me how thoroughly they enjoyed it, and most of them say the same thing. First of all, the older people, it brought back wonderful memories for them. A lot of younger people who weren't old enough to experience Jack Benny then came to find out about him and loved the show because it gave them a complete sort of patina of his entire life, not just simply the comedian, but they found out about his private life and his relationship with, and how he met his wife Mary and how he dealt with all of the people around him and how he put his radio show together. So it's wonderful to get that kind of feedback for people to really have this kind of experience, theatrical experience.
That's so great.
So, Eddie, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Now, have you ever actually in your travels met or worked with Jack Benny?
Yes, I did. Jack Benny had probably the most phenomenal career in show business, and the reason even today, he passed away in 1974. Here we are, how many years? 30 years later? 33, 34 years, 74, 84, 94, 2000. Yeah, so 33, 34 years later after his passing, people still remember him vividly. And the reason for that, guys, is because he was in vaudeville for years. Once he got on radio, he was on radio for 23 consecutive years. And after that, he went into television for another 10 years. He came into people's homes every single week from radio into television for 33 consecutive years, and then did specials and guestings on other shows for another 10 years. I mean, can you, today, if a television show stays on the air for 7 or 8 or 9 years, they call it this huge hit.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
After 7 or 8 years, after 33 years, I mean, there wasn't a human being in the country that period of time who didn't know who Jack Benny was, and he was
right.
As big a star in Canada and England and Australia as he was in his country here.
Huh.
It was a phenomenal success because he was so unique and so totally different than anybody else ever was. And so people absolutely just, he was truly the most loved comedian in this country and probably the best and remembered. In fact, not this last election, but the previous presidential election when Al Gore and George Bush were debating each other.
Yes.
In order to get across the fact, George Bush, in order to get across the fact in a statement he made to show that he was going to be able to spend a lot of money to help the country out, he said, "I won't be a Jack Benny when it comes to the budget." And he assumed everybody knew what he meant. He mean, you wouldn't be a cheapskate, you know?
Yes.
So that's why Jack Benny's image even today resonates so powerfully across the country. Now, people said to me years ago when I started doing Jack Benny in 1983, when I did it then, that show ran for about a year, and then it was supposed to go to Broadway. But New York Broadway theaters, you have to wait at least a year and a half to 2 years for a theater to be available, because that's how far in advance they're booked.
Mm-hmm.
So while we were waiting for a show, a theater to open in New York, I got busy with other projects. The producer in New York was busy with other stuff. Mm-hmm. And eventually he got so busy with other things, we just never got back to it again. So I called him after a few years and I said, "Are we still planning to do this?" He said, "I can't at the moment because I've got too many commitments." I said, "Can I get a release from you and do it on my own?" He said, God bless.
Oh.
I went to the Jack Benny estate, got their permission, and I sat down and wrote my own show. I wrote a whole new approach to the show so that that way I could have complete and total control over it and do the kind of show that I wanted to fulfill myself with.
Wow, so the show that you do now is not the show that you originally started with.
No, there's a lot of the material in terms of, I mean, basically it's still about Jack Benny's life.
Right.
So a lot of the basic things about his life still remain the same, but the way the show is structured, the way it is staged, the way it is presented is a whole different format. Because the original production opened up with Jack coming down from heaven and telling people the reason that he came back down to here is because he got God was getting so many complaints up in heaven that Benny was there, and they didn't think he should be because he was a cheapskate and a braggart and a boastful and everything else. And so God came in, and Benny said, "But that wasn't me. That was a character I created." And God said, "Well, you better go down and straighten people out because I'm tired of getting phone calls up here and you know." Well, I thought it goes a little creepy to remind
I was going to say, it is a little creepy and a little hokey.
That there's a dead person on stage,
yes.
You know? And I'm sure a lot of people accept the theatricality, but it's going to creep some people out. I mean, they know he's not alive anymore. I mean, the average intelligence of people say he died in 74. But I don't want to sit in a theater and right away be reminded that, by the way, the person on stage is not really alive. They're dead, you know?
Yes.
And so there was a lot of those kind of theatricalities in the thing that I didn't like in the first production I was able to gratefully get rid of and so forth. So now my show opens up with a screen that's a full set, and a screen comes down as the audience gets ready for the show. The show starts, the house goes black, a screen comes down, and we project on the screen about 3.5 minutes of some of the funniest moments from the Jack Benny television show. Now this accomplishes a couple of things. First of all, people don't have to try to remember their memory of Benny. They see him again. They're able to hear him again and his speech pattern, his delivery. They get familiar with his comedy. What they see makes them laugh, so it's a great warm-up, too.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time the last thing we see on the screen, after we've had 5 or 6 really funny moments, we freeze frame his typical pose on the screen. And as that frame, that image of his is frozen on the screen, the voice on the screen says, "To many people, Jack Benny's but a memory. But the lucky people hear that memory has come alive. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Jack Benny." And as we slowly fade the image on the screen, the spotlight picks me up stage right, standing in the same pose, the same look, the same suit, everything else that we've just seen on the screen.
Oh, wow.
See, that,
by the time I take
better.
Center stage, it's almost as though Benny has come off of the screen and come alive on stage. And it's just, and we start the show right from, like, right from the get-go, the audience has immediately accepted the fact that, wow, Benny's here. And to the point where by the time the show is over and I'm introduced as Eddie Carroll, people say, oh, my God, it isn't Jack Benny. Because they've been so into it, you know. For,
yeah.
Yes.
You know. So it's, of all the things I've done in my life as an actor, a writer, a producer, and all those things, and the various forms and fields of theater and working in New York and working on stage and doing all the stuff and everything else, nothing has given me as much joy as continuing to have the privilege of carrying on his legacy. I got sidetracked, and to answer your question, Dan, yes, in 1973, Jack Benny was doing a lot of his farewell specials. It was always my last farewell special, my second last. Anyway, I got called one day to come to go to, my agent called, and they said, they want you to go to NBC tomorrow. You're going to be doing a scene with Jack Benny. And so I was... We did a sketch. It was part of a commercial in the body of the show where I played a stage manager with the earphones on, and I kept saying, oh, Mr. Benny, I'm sorry, it's not camera three, it's camera one. So, oh, for heaven's sake, make up your mind, you know. And he gave us that kind of byplay back and forth. And he was just a wonderful, wonderful human being, probably the most approachable star in show business.
Mm-hmm.
Had none of that star attitude about him at all. In fact, he was born Benny Kabelski in Waukegan, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And I swear he still felt he was just Benny Kabelski, being very lucky and fortunate to have a job and having worked in this business, you know. But a very, very sweet man. In fact, he even came up to me while we were rehearsing the sketch, and they stopped to relight and reset the thing. And Freddie DeCordova, who later would produce the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
Right.
He was up in the booth because he directed and produced most of Jack Benny's specials. And Jack came over to me and he said, you know, kid, listen, I you're wonderful the way you set me up in this scene and everything. Your timing is terrific. But you know something? You call me Jack or Mr. Benny, and I don't call you anything. Now, if you know me well enough to call me Jack or Mr. Benny, then I should call you by your name. And I thought, what other actor, what other star would even think of that? I mean,
right.
How sweet of him to even care enough to... So he looked up at the boom microphone in front above us. He said, Freddie, can you hear me up in the booth? And we through the speaker, we said, Freddie, he said, yeah, Jack. He said, listen, this kid is so good. And he calls me Jack or Mr. Benny in this sketch we're doing. I don't call him anything. Now, if he knows me well enough to call me by name, I should know who he is. So he said, well, let's give him a name. So Freddie said, yeah, sure, Jack. Thinking to himself, whatever you want.
Right.
So anyway, Jack turned to me and with such earnestness said, you know, I'm getting on in years and my memory is just awful. Wait, what was your name again? I said, Eddie Carroll. He said, well, from now on, you're Eddie. Like he gave me a gift of my own name. And he was so excited about it. And I knew what he meant by that, but it seemed so silly and ludicrous, I couldn't help it. So with my best Jack Benny at that time imitation, I said, well, I certainly hope so, because that's the name I was given. And he gave me this long Benny stare, and he looked at the microphone and he said, the hell with him, Fred, he doesn't need a name. And then we both got hysterical and started to laugh, but... That was the Jack Benny that people just absolutely loved and adored. He was just a very simple guy.
So, okay, I'm looking at something on your bio that stuck out for me here, is that you were in a version of The Odd Couple, but you were doing Felix Unger, you were doing Jack Benny as Felix Unger? Is that right?
Yes. What happened is there's probably the best dinner theater in the entire country, the most successful and the most beautiful theater, I mean, multi-million dollar theater. Two producers from Kansas City came to Hollywood, made a lot of money doing movies of the week, went back to Kansas City and built this gorgeous theater called the New Theater, the New Dinner Theater. And it is just absolutely, people on Broadway salivate when they see this theater.
Huh.
I mean, it's just state-of-the-art everything. Well, they get the biggest stars to come in and headline all of the shows that they do year-round. Don Knotts did a show there every year for them. A ton of people. Dick Van Patten, all these people loved going there. So one day, a friend of mine, by the name of Frank Ferrante, does a one-man show of Groucho Marx, the way I do Jack Benny.
Oh.
And he's brilliant. And so he was there doing his Groucho Marx production. And after he was at the end of his engagement there, and he was having lunch one day with the producers, the two guys, the partners, and they said, you know, they were saying to Frank, because we have a huge subscription list, we want to try to find out, if we're going to mount productions, we want to mount the kind of engagements that people we know will want to come to see. And the best way to do that is to send out a questionnaire which lists every musical ever done, every drama ever done, every play ever done, every comedy and everything else, and have them select the shows they want to come and see, which is great marketing.
Sure.
Sure.
Very democratic.
And because Broadway doesn't do that many new things anymore. Well, apparently, of all the comedies that were listed, the number one show everybody checked off was The Odd Couple. And Richard, the head producer, was saying to Frank, he said, it's so bizarre because he said, The Odd Couple has been done to death. It was not only a movie, it was a television series. Every theater company, every theater, every high school, every church group has done The Odd Couple. I don't think there's anybody in the world who hasn't seen one version of it or another. How can we do it differently rather than just a standard play? So as he's talking about it too, and he suddenly stops and he says, wait a minute, I got an idea. And Frank said, what? What if we did The Odd Couple with Groucho Marx as Oscar and Jack Benny as Felix? And Frank said, geez, I don't know. He said, you think Eddie Carroll would be interested? Let's call him. They called me, and I happened to be at home then, and they told me the idea, and the producer said, what do you think of the idea? I said, it sounds like a bad episode of The Twilight Zone. It's a little weird. I said, but I tell you what, let me fly out to Kansas City in the next few days, meet you guys, let Frank and I go through the play and read it. And I said, the only reason, the way I'll ever do this is if you don't tamper with the script, if you don't change a word of it. I don't want the script to pander to the characters.
Right.
I don't want it to be a platform for a vaudeville impression kind of shtick. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes, yes.
It has to be played right down the middle, exactly the way it's supposed to be done. The only difference is that Felix will be played, the audience will see Jack Benny, but Jack Benny has to be Felix in the play. And we can't tamper with that. So anyway, went out there, I saw that theater, I went, oh my God, I would do the Yellow Pages in this place. It's beautiful. I mean, they have a circular stage, like a turntable, that if you have a set on the backside of it behind the curtain, the lights go out, the turntable turns around, the curtain opens up, you've got a brand new set already ready to.
Mm-hmm.
It's just fabulous. So we read the play, and we all began to realize the way the play was written, as is, if that play had been written back in the 50s or late 40s, early 50s, when Jack Benny and Groucho Marx were still young and vital, if they had been cast in that play, they would have been perfect for each of those roles.
Oh, wow.
You know, as I was reading it on here, I was thinking, okay, so Benny is Unger, but who would you get for Oscar?
Oh, Groucho Marx.
But that is perfect casting. Like,
it was awesome. So,
but
you know something? It's the first time in the entire history of the United States theater that two actors had to play two characters simultaneously and had to focus their concentration was so powerful that you had to be true to both characters. I had to walk down the line. I couldn't overdo Benny. The audience had to be able to see that it was Jack Benny, but they also had to believe that Jack Benny character was Felix. So really, there were three identities on stage. There was mine, which I had to subjugate and become Jack Benny, but Benny that had made sure that he was Felix. So when you talk about total focus of concentration was so powerful every second on that stage because your mind is double-tracking constantly to make sure that one thing doesn't overshadow the other. But what an exhilaration it was. Well, I tell you something. When we were in rehearsal in October to open in November, and the play was supposed to run from November till February, a week before we opened, they had an ad in the paper, and all it had was a caricature of Jack Benny and the famous Sardi's caricature that you see of Groucho Marx,
mm-hmm.
And the ad simply said, Groucho Marx and Jack Benny starring in The Odd Couple. That's all the ad said.
That's all it needs.
That is all it needs.
Phones never stopped ringing, and one old lady called up and she said, I'm so glad to see these old actors are still working.
Yeah, I bet you got a few of that. I'm not surprised.
Then within a week, they were sold out to the end of Christmas, and by Christmas they were sold out to the end of February. People were coming by bus from Des Moines, Iowa, and several production companies heard about it. They came in and wanted to take this thing. Two guys got a hold of it and went to the Nederlander theater people who own theaters on Broadway and all over the country, told them the concept, showed them the reviews, and the Nederlander people said, get a contract from Neil Simon that we can do this, and we'll guarantee you a two-year tour of the best theaters in this country, and then we go to Australia and England. They went to Neil Simon. He said, forget about it, not interested, don't even want to talk about it.
No kidding.
Said, Neil, it's been done with girls. It's been done with blacks. It's been done gay. It's been done every possible way. This is a whole new, fresh approach to doing the show. He said, I'm writing a screenplay right now for Lemon and Mathau for The Odd Couple 20 years later when their kids get married to each other. I don't want anything else to interfere.
Oh, my goodness. Was this in the 90s?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, this is 95, winter of 95 into 96 in that area.
Geez.
So, I mean, but you know what? In a way, it's fine because nature has a way of keeping track and God has a way of keeping us, you know, going down the right path because Frank and I have been so busy with our own shows that I think that would have kind of put a crimp in, even though it would have been exhilarating, you know, to do that. But it, as an experience, it was magnificent. I mean, it's some of those things that we have to look back on that we've done in our lives was just absolutely fabulous.
Well, I tell you, it's so sad that's done and passed now because, I mean, I get so excited when we get musicals coming down here. Like, I'm going to see Wicked in a couple weeks, which I'm so excited about.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, that sound, it's like heartbreaking.
Oh, yes. Well, simply because it was such an enjoyable show, and then on top of that, the audience really got their money's worth because not only did they have the vicarious joy of being able to see The Odd Couple, which is probably the greatest comedy, the most perfect comedy ever written, ever, in the American language. It was Neil Simon's brilliance. I mean, he was at his top of his game. But they had the added joy of seeing two very well-known legends from comedy portraying them. But once the show was over and we came out and took our bows after the Pigeon Sisters came out and then the guys who pulled the poker players, when they left, Frank and I stayed on stage and did another 20 minutes just ad-lib comedy. And
no
they're
kidding.
Just having fun in the characters of those two people for the audience.
Oh, my gosh.
They left just sailing around. Well, word of mouth got up. People were desperate. We're calling, please, just put extra chairs down. I know.
Standing room. I'll take
it. So, you know, it was one of those rare moments that came along in life. So I feel doubly blessed. I mean, the fact that I still can't believe, I wake up some days and can't believe that of all the actors in the business, from all the great actors from New York and Hollywood and everything else, how it came for me to be the one to carry on Jack Benny's legacy, I don't know. But I just give thanks for it every day.
Well, that is so cool. You know, we're on the radio now. Well,
right.
We're our own version of the radio.
Yes.
And we listen to a lot of the old-time radio programs. And, you know, it's so wholesome but still funny, you know. It's like funny in its own way nowadays, you know.
Absolutely. And you know something, Jessica, I was telling Dan and I talked about it briefly just when we and I first had our conversation. One of the reasons why the Jack Benny Show in particular as a radio show still holds up today and is still just as funny today as it was when it was on, there's nothing dated in the show. And the reason for that is if you analyze the humor from Jack Benny, all the humor came from characters relating to each other, and the humor came out of human behavior.
Mm-hmm.
The
mm-hmm.
one thing that we identify with immediately is we recognize human behavior because we saw in Jack Benny all the traits we saw in our Uncle Jack and on our brother Bill and our, you know, and people around us because he literally emanated all those characteristics and weaknesses that we all have as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that 400 years after Shakespeare wrote his plays, they're just as popular today as they were back then, because why? It was all about human behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was Romeo and Juliet or Julius Caesar or Mark Antony or King Lear, it doesn't matter because the story was really about fear and revenge and anger and love and all of those human behavior traits that are no different than they are today.
How many television shows nowadays rely on your knowledge of pop culture and reference this and that, and if you don't know it, then you're not getting it.
Exactly.
You know?
But those shows hold up because they still are about just basic relationships between human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they're still funny today. There was a typical example of a professor of English literature and of comedy writing at Columbia University in New York at the time that Jack Benny's radio shows were like number one. He listened to a particular episode one week, and he laughed so hard he was falling off his chair. He just literally said, "That's the funniest show I've ever heard in my life." So he wrote the Jack Benny show from New York. He wrote to them in Hollywood, said, "Could you please send me a copy of the script? Because I want to show it to my students in my class to show them what really perfect comedy writing is."
Right.
They sent him the script. He sat down to read it, and he got halfway through, and he said, "There's nothing funny here."
Oh, gosh.
They're laughing. He was looking for, there are no jokes. The lines by themselves don't mean a thing.
Wow.
But when you put it together in terms of the conversations back and forth,
right,
and what the conversations were about, the humor came out of the comedy, came out of the relationships, and it came out of timing. There's a wonderful, if ever you have to give somebody a description of why is timing important in comedy, there's the classic one is Bud Abbott and Lou Costello doing their Who's On First. Because if you see the lines on paper, there's no jokes there.
Right.
Everything depended on the timing back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing. There's another wonderful sketch that Jack Benny did with Mel Blanc when Mel Blanc plays this little Mexican guy. And it's called the Si-Si Sue routine.
Okay.
Where Jack Benny is trying to use the telephone, and there's a guy on the phone. He says, "Excuse me, sir, I'm trying to use the phone." He said, "Are you going to be finished with the phone?" "See." "Well, how soon? Are you going to be finished in a few minutes?" "See." "Okay. What is your name?" "Sai." "Sai?" "See." Well, all of those little things mean nothing on paper, but when you listen to this with the timing that they do on it, I've heard that 100 times, and every time I hear it, I fall down screaming with laughter. Because it's timing. The timing sets up a rhythm inside of you, and that's what brings the laugh out. It's the same way when you listen to a great piece of music. When it's beautifully written, when the strings are soft and soft, and then they start building and building, and suddenly, pow, the drums come in, and then the horns come in, you get a goosebump.
Mm-hmm.
Because the guy that composed the music knew just when to bring it in to lift your emotions up. You know, same thing in movies. We don't realize it, but half of the things we feel when we watch a movie is garnered by the music. If it's properly, if the score of a movie is properly done, the score lets you know that something terrible is coming up. There's a boom going
Definitely.
On. Look what they did with Jaws with the boom, boom, boom.
Yes.
Every time you heard that, you went, oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's the same thing getting back to comedy and good writing, knowing just when to say the right word, knowing when to bring the line in.
So, all right, I have a question for you. I know there happens to be a pretty big Jack Benny fan club. So I'm just curious, what is the reaction that you get from those members?
Fabulous. I mean, it's a good thing my head doesn't expand too much because I never wear a hat again. But it's just been wonderful. And I'll tell you something, it's what's really heartwarming to me is that you have the International Jack Benny Fan Club. First of all, the president of it, who's only in her 30s, and knows more about Jack Benny than I do, and I've been doing the show since 1983.
Wow.
Knows about his life. She's incredible. But most of the fans are like that. Any city that I go to, I know when I go out to the lobby, there's going to be anywhere from 1 to 25 or 30 people who are members of Jack Benny Fan Club.
Oh, wow.
Of every age and description you can think of. And they get on the website, they get on the chat room, they start having conversations back and forth about a particular show and a particular actor and what this and so forth. I mean, it's incredible the kind of excitement and interest that everybody has about Jack Benny. Give you another example about when people say, well, nobody under 40 will remember who Jack Benny is.
Right.
Every single time I do a show, there's always young people in the audience who are introduced to it because now, guys, there are, in most of the big cities, Baltimore, Seattle, Newark, L.A., all over the country,
mm-hmm.
there are, in addition to the Jack Benny Fan Club, there are radio clubs that thousands of people belong to in that city. They have a huge newsletter that goes out once a month. They get together and have conventions where there's like 5,000 vendors and people coming from all over the country, and for 3 days They have actors coming in who were worked on radio back in the early days, and they recreate radio shows with complete scripts and music and sound effects just like it was back then. I mean, this is huge. So you have a huge, big fan base out there still even today, and garnering an awful lot of younger people as well.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep. So it really is kind of heartening to go out there. And I went did a show in a city called Rancho Cucamonga, which is about 45 minutes outside of the center of Los Angeles, one of the communities there. They have a statue of Jack Benny. They just built a brand-new, gorgeous, state-of-the-art theater. In the lobby, they have a 15-foot-high marble statue of Jack Benny in their lobby. And the reason for that is, when Jack Benny did his radio show, anytime he went down to, in the course of a show where he was supposed to get on a train and go somewhere,
right,
to New York or whatever, the minute he would get to Union Station, there was a running gag where as soon as he said, well, here we are at Union Station again, and then you'd hear Mel Blanc doing his famous train track announcement. Train leaving on track 3 for Anaheim, Azusa, and Cucamonga. Well, every time he went out, so this became a running gag. Well, it literally put the city of Cucamonga on the map.
Uh-huh.
Because a lot of people thought it was just made up names until they found out there really was an Anaheim, Azusa, and a Cucamonga. So anyway, we filled the theater, and a lady named Wendy brought her little 6-year-old daughter, Sarah, to see it. Sarah, at 6 years of age, is so hooked on the Jack Benny radio shows that rather than have her mother read her a bedtime story at night, she listens to one of the radio episodes of Jack Benny before she goes to sleep.
That's great.
That's awesome.
Knows every character and discusses the difference between Dennis and Rochester and everybody else.
Aww.
And the kicker to it is she is the daughter of the late James Doohan, who played Scotty on Star Trek.
Oh, wow.
No kidding.
And we have a picture taken of her with me, with her hand on her cheek like Jack Benny, with the most gorgeous, most incredible, delightful smile on her face. And I've got my hand on one cheek. I'm kind of looking down, pointing towards her, and we're in front of this statue of Jack Benny.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely heartwarming.
Uh-huh.
So we emailed that picture to Laura Left, the president of the Jack Benny Fan Club, and she was so delighted with it, we're going to put it in the next issue of the Jack Benny Times, their newsletter, the Jack Benny Fan Club newsletter.
Oh, that's really cute.
Yep. So,
okay, I want to switch gears real quick.
Yeah.
How did you get to be the voice of Jiminy Cricket?
Well, here's another example. Can you imagine how double my cups runneth over? Is, you know, not only have I been doing Jack Benny since 83, but I've been doing Jiminy Cricket for 33 years. Two great legendary characters, one a real one and one an animated one. In 1973, there was a gentleman named Cliff Edwards. He was the original voice of mm-hmm. Jiminy Cricket when they did the movie in 1939. And the reason they hired him, because he also had an additional name by the name of Ukulele Ike. He was a singer. And back in the 20s and 30s, that high tenor voice was very popular. So Walt Disney hired him to play the character of Jiminy Cricket. But he said to him, he said, Cliff, we hired you because you're going to be singing When You Wish Upon a Star and all the songs in there. But when you read your dialogue as the character, don't create a funny little voice for me like Mel Blanc would do with, yeah, what's up, Doc, or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Because
right.
If you analyze the story of Pinocchio, Jiminy Cricket has been given the job by the good fairy to teach this wooden puppet how to be a real person with all the great traits of, you know, humanity and charity and care and love and all of that kind of thing and honesty and so forth. He said, so if you give him a silly little voice, the audience is going to think the character is there for comedy relief and they won't take
right.
it seriously. So even though he's small and green and a cricket and all of that and an insect, he said, use your own natural human speaking voice because then they'll accept him as a person who has been given this job of treat, you know, so forth. Well, after the movie came out, when television came along, there was a need for a lot of product. Disney had a lot of outlets on television.
Right.
And they started getting requests for sing-along tapes and for instructional tapes and safety films and all the rest of it for schools to show their children and everything else and so forth. And they found that of all the animated characters Disney had, the one person that people responded to immediately was Jiminy. He was cute and delightful and lovable. He was your conscience, your guide, your buddy. Plus, he was the only Disney animated character that sounded like a real person.
Yes.
Oh. So if you had pages and pages of dialogue, you couldn't use Donald Duck because you couldn't understand what he said.
Right.
You know,
yes.
Goofy Will, shucks, you know, that wouldn't last very long.
No, it sure wouldn't.
But with Jiminy, it was, now remember, Pinocchio, always tell the truth, because if you lie, your nose is going to grow and grow. So there was that kindness about it. There was a cuteness about it, but you could understand him, and you paid attention to him. So he literally became a spokesman for almost all the divisions of Disney. Well, in 1973, Cliff passed away, and Disney spent months auditioning hundreds of actors and voiceover people to find somebody who could do Jiminy exactly the way Cliff did it, because they wanted the character to sound continuously perennial. They didn't want a change in the vocal quality.
Right.
So at that time, I just happened to, my voiceover agent called and said, Disney's having problems, they can't find someone to do Jiminy Cricket. And at that time, I didn't know this whole story. I just knew that Jiminy had been in a movie called Pinocchio, and I wasn't aware of all the stuff that they did for Disney and all of that. But we had a little children's album at home, several of them, for my son, who was very young at the time. And there was a little cut in there that where Jiminy's talking to Pinocchio. He said, now remember, Pinocchio, I'm your conscience, and you better listen to me, young man, and went through all that whole thing. So anyway, I captured the vocal quality, and I auditioned for it. And a few days later, my agent called and said, you got the job. Well, but he's so excited, he's doing cartwheels.
Right.
I couldn't understand it. And because in those days, and most of the time, guys, when you audition for a voiceover job, you're auditioning for one job.
Right.
A commercial, a this or a that, and that's it. So I said, what was all the fuss about for one job? He said, Eddie, you'll have a job the rest of your life.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then he outlined for me, you know, how Disney, Jiminy uses, is used as a spokesman for everything we do. So, since then, almost every month, year after year after year, stuff for the parks and this stuff for television. Now we're doing computer games for kids and the House of Mouse on Disney Channel and everything else. So between Jiminy and Jack, I mean, it's been wonderful.
Wow.
That is fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
I am almost out of time here, but I was wondering if I could get you to do a personal favor for me, Eddie.
Sure.
I was wondering if you could just say, hi, you're listening to Talk Radio X.
You're listening to Talk Radio X?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Are you ready?
Yes, sir.
Hi, folks. You're listening to Talk Radio X. It's wonderful.
That was so good.
That was great. Thank you
also
so
want
much.
To tell everybody listening that if they want to know a little more about what I might show and all the rest of it, all they have to do is just go to eddiecarroll.com. That's EddieCarroll. Go to eddiecarroll.com. You'll find out all about the show, what I do, and everything else. And there's also a schedule page on my website where you can see where I'm going to be appearing next. Because coming up soon, we'll be in Helena, Montana, March 12th. And then April 19th and 21st, we'll be in Newberry, South Carolina, and Beaufort. And then May 4th and May 7th, we'll be in Jacksonville, Florida, and Dayton, Florida, so Daytona. So if you folks are there and want to come up and see the show, you know, just check the website. I'd love to come and see you after it all. I'll see you in the lobby, folks.
Fantastic.
Well, you're definitely going to see us there.
Yeah, you will definitely see us. You will definitely see us at one of those Florida shows. I guarantee it.
Terrific. Well, Dan, you also said your dad might be interested in coming too, right?
Oh yeah, I'm going to drag him with me. Absolutely.
Oh, terrific.
Yes,
terrific.
Yes.
So, ladies and gentlemen, if you only see one show all year, go see Hamlet. But if you want to see two good shows, come and see Jack Benny, Laughter and Gloom, starring Eddie Carroll. I guarantee you, you'll have the best time you've ever had.
Oh, so good.
Eddie, I can't thank you enough. Thank you for being on the show with me.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you, and see you later.
See you later. Have a great night.
Thank you.
And we have about a minute and a half, and Jessica, do you have anything that you want to say about Eddie Carroll?
That was so good. That was
how
so good.
All right, how good is his Jack Benny? I mean, it's phenomenal, right?
It is so dead on.
It's one of the best.
I just want to talk to, and I wish like he would, which I just want to see the show. That's all.
You know what's funny? I talked to him before, just about 10 minutes before we went on the air, and he was like, "Well, how do you want to do the interview? You know, how do you want me to do it?" And I kind of got the impression that if I said, "Well, why don't you do it as Jack Benny, and I'll just interview Jack Benny for an hour," I think he would have done it.
Oh, yeah, but I don't think I could have done it.
I know.
I'd have been so starstruck by this.
And it's kind of like you're taking something for free.
You know
what I mean?
Yeah, no.
So kind of taking something away there. So anyway, just like Jack Benny would say, we're running a little late tonight. So good night, folks. Say good night, Jessica.
Good night, Jessica.
Yamma, 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 yamma. Whoopee-doo, Scooby-Doo, and gobbledygook.